it's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. And whether you're listening to us on the radio, as most of you will be here in western Pennsylvania, or maybe you're listening in another part of the country on your laptop or on your phone or even another part of the world, welcome as we stream this program all over. And what a treat we have for you on the first portion of our program today. As I've been telling you for the past couple of days, Marianne Cornetti is with us here in the studio, internationally acclaimed opera singer and hometown gal, if I may use that appellation. It's so nice to see you again.
Oh, Dave, I can't tell you how great it is to see you. I think the last time I saw you was when I was in singing with Butler Symphony a couple of years ago.
That's right.
And it's a pleasure to be back.
One of the newer members of our staff, because I was saying today, I said, oh, Marianne's going to be here. And they said, have you interviewed her before? And I said, well, yes, I have. And they, when I told them how you had sung all over the world, they're kind of looking at me wide-eyed. And I said, don't worry, she's a very down-to-earth, wonderful person. You'd never know she was an internationally acclaimed opera star.
Oh, thank you, Dave. That is a great compliment. It truly is. My parents made sure that I was humble in doing what I was doing. My mother had said, you have a gift, and it's a gift from God. And so remember, humility is number one. And I've always remained like that. And I feel very happy to come back to my roots and, you know, still give back. It's time now.
For those of you, the few of you perhaps, who don't know the name Marianne Cornetti, she is from Butler County, Cabot, I think, right?
Cabot, specifically, Dave, Denny's Mills.
Denny's Mills, okay. And graduate of Knock High School.
Yes, 1981. Wow. We're coming up on that big milestone of the big 4-0. I cannot believe that. That just seems like yesterday.
Yeah. She is also marking an anniversary of her professional singing career, which is the reason that she's here to chat with us today, although I just love to talk to her about her experiences and her world travels, and we're going to do that while she's sitting here. We're just going to have a nice, relaxed conversation. But just in case people are listening in the car, and you know you're pulling into the mall or the supermarket or whatever, I want to mention some local concerts that Marianne's going to be doing. And then we'll talk a little bit about her career, but I wouldn't want anybody to miss out on the fact that you're going to be singing around here for a while, right?
Yes, I have decided, since it is my 30th anniversary of when I made my professional debut with Pittsburgh Opera, November 4th, 1989. It was actually my birthday, but I'm going to tell you, I don't remember celebrating my birthday that day. But I decided I wanted to do something really special. And I kept thinking, how did I get here? How did I get to sing all over the world? A kid from Cabot, how did that happen? And I thought a lot about it, and it was the churches, Dave. It was the churches and the communities all around this area, from Butler to the Allegheny Valley, even into Pittsburgh. That's where I really got to, you know, sink my teeth into singing solos. I was 12 years old when I started to sing at St. Mary's in Herman, Pennsylvania, in the choir. 12 years old.
Wow.
And they gave me the opportunity to sing those first solos. Of course, you make mistakes. Of course, you know, not every time was perfect. Of course. But those were all learning grounds that I thought, my goodness sakes, without all of those, I may not be in the position to have really gone off to Manhattan School of Music, Cincinnati Conservatory, and Duquesne University, and then off to the rest of the world. So I decided I wanted to give back after 30 years of doing what I've done all over the world. I've decided to give these concerts for an entire year at all the churches that I sang at, communities around the area. And I'm giving these concerts. The first one is this Sunday, November 17th, Trinity United Methodist Church, at 4 p.m., and it's an all-religious concert. I've never done an all-religious concert, but these are songs that I grew up with. They're songs that I sang in all of these churches. And all the proceeds go to a charity of the church's choice or my choice. And at Trinity United Methodist Church, it's going to the Allegheny Valley Association of Churches to their food bank, especially at this time. I think it's very important, you know, to give back at that Thanksgiving time. The second one is the following weekend, and that is November 24th, 4 p.m. again. And it's at Coriopolis United Methodist Church. And the reason I've chosen that church is because my really brilliant pianist, Brian Sable, is the music director at that church. And I thought, what a great way to give back also to his church, even though I had never sung there. Mm-hmm. But he is part of this whole journey. And so I'm giving that concert, and all of those proceeds go to the Coriopolis Community Developmental Foundation. It entails food bank, lots of other things. And so the journey has begun, and I'm very excited about it. There is a suggested donation of $20, but you can give whatever you like. And there's a lot of very emotional moments that I'm weaving some of the stories throughout my career into this concert.
Just to make sure people know, Trinity United Methodist, that's this Sunday. Where is that?
Okay. Oh, yes, of course. It's in Brackenridge, Pennsylvania, okay. Right next door to Natrona Heights and Tarentum, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Chance to have you seen and heard Marianne Cornetti? Here's a chance, a couple of concerts, and there'll be more coming up
over
the next year.
But. Yes, there are a lot that are lined up, but first of all, I have to have a sort of a knee surgery in January, and then probably in March, then we'll start up again. But there's quite a number of churches that really want to do this, and I'm very excited to do them.
Now, when you started singing solo for the first time, and we were 12 years old, you said it was at St. Mary's in Herman?
Yes.
Would this be hymns? I mean, or were you singing classical mass parts at that age, or what were you doing?
I just joined the choir.
Oh.
Yes, and I was in the choir, and of course then they recognized that I had a talent, and I'm sure it was probably when I was about 14 or so, I got some solo parts,
mm-hmm.
and I sang in that church until I went off to college, and some when I came back and visited home, you know, that kind of thing. But I certainly had a lot of solos at that church. Oh my goodness, I could go on and on and on about the number of hours that I worked with Margaret Schnorr as the organist at that church, and lots of memories.
We're talking to Marianne Cornetti, in case you've joined us a few minutes late here on It's Your Turn today. And it's so terrific to have her in the studio with us once again. I surprised Marianne, and it was thanks to a listener, by the way. You know what I'm going to show you here. I did not see a listener came into the station today. She heard me talking yesterday glowingly about the fact that Marianne was going to be with us to chat today. So she brought in to the front desk here at the radio station this morning, a picture of Marianne Cornetti in the Nock High School senior yearbook. This was your senior picture. And you know how they have all the seniors and, you know, what their activities they've been in and
right.
You know, what they want to do in life and yada, yada, yada. Well, first of all, Marianne was named most musical in her senior class.
Oh, that's my goodness.
Pretty obvious. And your career goal was to make it to the Metropolitan Opera. Metropolitan Opera Company. By gosh.
Oh, gosh, you know.
You pulled it off.
I did. You know, you're saying that. Really, I get a little bit choked up about that because I can't tell you, Dave, how many times people have asked me, how does a kid from Cabot make it to the Metropolitan Opera? And believe me, it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters if you have the village around you, the family around you, the drive to do it, the talent to do it, and the God-given gift.
Marianne's tearing up a little bit, and so am I at this wonderful story. And I thank the listener. I didn't get to see her. The receptionist brought her back to my desk, and thank you so much, whoever you are.
Yes, whoever you are. In. My goodness.
So this is a real treat. I don't know how you had time to sing. Look at all these activities you were in. Pennsylvania Governor's School for the Arts, Regional Chorus, District Chorus, Honors Chorus.
Oh, my goodness.
German Club. Oh, no wonder you can sing in German. You took German at Knock High School.
German was my first foreign language.
Cast of Brigadoon, MAME, Anything Goes, Funny Girl. Oh, Brigadoon.
Oh, wonderful roles.
Come to me, bend to me.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. But you know, Dave, when you're reading that, it takes me right back. Hmm. When I think about, you know, I talk about the village. It's the village of that great high school. It was, you know, Evie Callender was called by the sixth grade teacher, and she said, you got to watch out for this one. And it was Evie Callender that watched out for me, and she got me in seventh grade, and she immediately gave me a solo in seventh grade, and really helped me to shape and mold where I was going. And so you're just grateful for these kinds of people. Diana Walters, my first voice teacher. When I think about just having a really good teacher for a good foundation, it's a blessing. And I can say throughout these, just not 30 years of singing, because it's really 43 years of building this craft, I've never had a bad voice teacher, never once. Mm. And my teachers are something that are very, very important to me, absolutely. About 10 years ago, I wanted to do something for my teachers because they are a part of my whole carpet. And I decided to go back to the very first teachers at first grade, and I went through all of the teachers, and those who were still alive, I picked up the phone and called them and just said, thank you for guiding me in the right direction. And there was a concert that I had given in Carnegie Hall. And I didn't know this, but there were six of the teachers from Knock High School that had come to this. This was just 4 or 5 years ago. And before I ended that concert, I made them all stand up, and I thanked each one of them individually.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Very important teachers.
Marianne Cornetti visiting with us. You're just back. I'll talk more about how your career progressed, but you're just back from China, right? You were singing in China?
I was singing in China because of the unfortunate mishap that happened to me this summer. I wasn't sure if I was going to get there. And it was only 3 weeks until the first rehearsal or I made a decision that I could do it. And it was great to go back. The theater was so wonderful. I have a problem with my knee, and the theater said, Marianne, please come. We'll do anything to help you. If you need to sit the entire time, you can. But come, we will help you. And believe me, they did. And it was the third time that I was back there. And it was a huge success for me, really a huge success. I'm walking around with a cane right now. But I decided I was going to ditch that cane on stage, and it truly helped the character. You know, Dave, we live for our art. And so it made her a much vulnerable character, and the audience really felt it.
What, were you in several cities in China or all in the same opera house?
No, all in the same opera house, the National Center for the Performing Arts in Beijing. Mm-hmm. wonderful, wonderful, glorious theater. Really beautiful.
I need to take a break here, but I want to trace a little bit of your education once you graduated from Knock High School. And obviously, from your yearbook, I know that you were already going to be embarking on a career, a professional career in music. Marianne Cornetti is here. What a treat we have for you today. We'll take a break and be back with more of the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Like it or not, winter is coming. Not to worry, West End Tire and Service has over 400 snow tires in stock for cars and light-duty trucks. They also sell tires for large trucks, trailers, heavy equipment, skid loaders, backhoes, and more. With a vast selection of Cooper tires, West End Tire and Service prides itself on offering the same great installation and service as Siemens provided for years. Plus, they have the same great staff, too. Call 724-287-6973 or stop by West End Tire Service today, West Cunningham Street in Butler.
Central Electric Cooperative wants to remind you that safety should not take a holiday this Christmas season. Hello, I'm Matt Boshaw, CEO and General Manager for Central Electric. Here are a few tips to consider when planning for this year's festivities. Inspect electrical decorations for damage before use. Do not overload electrical outlets. Switch to LED decorations that use less energy while offering greater safety. Keep live trees fresh by watering daily. Protect cords from damage by never placing under carpets or securing with staples. Unplug all decorations before leaving the house or going to sleep. Keep a safe distance from your home's overhead electric service when hanging decorations. Do not place decorations on utility poles. This is a danger to you and to our linemen. Central Electric Cooperative wishes everyone a safe and blessed holiday season with family and friends. At Central Electric, safety is everyone's responsibility. My personal safety goal is to ensure all of my coworkers and I make it home safely each night. What's yours? This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
From great breakfast specials to hosting holiday parties, Michael's Restaurant is the place to be in Butler County. Start your day with a satisfying breakfast, then begin planning a holiday party at Michael's. They have a party room for approximately 20 people for Christmas parties or family get-togethers. Call today to reserve your date. Pumpkin pies and apple dumplings are now available.
Welcome back. Marianne Cornetti is here with us. She is embarking on a series of concerts here in the area over the next several months. One of them is coming up this Sunday, in fact, at Trinity United Methodist Church in Brackenridge.
Brackenridge, yes.
And then she'll be singing the following weekend in Coriopolis.
Yes.
And there'll be more coming throughout the year. But Marianne is marking 30 years as a professional opera singer, an acclaimed, internationally acclaimed singer. You are a mezzo-soprano.
Yes.
Okay. I know Tony Soprano. I know sopranos. I know from my church choir, we have sopranos, we have altos, we have tenors, we have bass.
Right.
I don't know what a mezzo-soprano is.
Well, a mezzo-soprano, in the actual literal sense of the Italian word, is half of a soprano. So what you could say is I'm an alto, but a mezzo soprano has to have pretty much all of the same notes as a soprano, but we just don't stay up there as long as the sopranos stay up there. Huh. We go up and then we come down, and then we go up again and then we come down. As long as we don't have to hang up there too long, we're in good shape.
But you can do lower range than most sopranos.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's where we have the goods on the sopranos. Mm-hmm. We have the bottom part of our voice.
I must tell you, and I'm an amateur. I sing in the church choir.
That's fantastic.
But I've always appreciated a great alto woman's voice.
Sure.
There are some soprano. They're beautiful. They always get to sing the melody, you know. But,
right.
But I think a rich woman's alto voice is just gorgeous.
Thank you for saying that, because, you know, a lot of times we don't get that kind of recognition. Because when you think of a real, like an Eileen Farrell, Marian Anderson type of singer, the part of their voice is the middle and the bottom part of their voice. It's so rich and colorful. And that can just be as exciting as, you know, a soprano singing the top notes. Mm-hmm. And as a mezzo-soprano, you have to have all of those. You have to have a bottom, a middle, and a top. And I have been sort of titled or categorized as a falcone, a falcon type of voice. The Italians talk about the falcone of voce, the voice of a falcon. And that is where I can do also some soprano dramatic roles along with the mezzo dramatic roles, like, for instance, Abigail from Nabucco. I'm the very first mezzo to have sung this role at the Metropolitan Opera.
Hmm.
It's a really difficult role, but boy, I held my own and I came out and let her fly. And another role like that is Lady Macbeth from Verdi's Macbeth. That's a role that can be sometimes done by a mezzo-soprano. Santuzza from Cavalleria Rusticana. Speaking of that, not that I'm here to give you all my accolades, but there are moments that were very, very, very poignant to me, and I'm so proud of them. I was the very first mezzo-soprano to sing the role of Santuzza at La Scala as an American, because the Italians really felt, because it's a real Siciliana from Sicily, a role, that they really wanted an Italian singer. Well, I am Italian, half of it anyways, and the other half Irish.
La Scala, and I don't know a whole lot about opera, just enough to be dangerous. but La Scala is one of the most famous opera houses in the world. It's in Milan, right?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is.
So you've sung there.
Several
you've sung
times.
In Beijing. You've Metropolitan Opera.
Right. Vienna.
I'm looking at the list of places that you've sung. My goodness. Frankfurt. The Israeli Opera. Verona.
The Arena in Verona.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You were just in... You're going to the Canary Islands soon?
Going to the Canary Islands to do a concert in Tenerife.
Wow.
Yeah, it's called Broadway to Verdi. So, the Europeans don't get to hear a lot of the Broadway tunes. And so I had done this concert, a couple of years ago in, Coruña, Spain. And the audience absolutely went crazy. They loved it. They don't get to hear these wonderful show tunes. And that is my heritage, And then along with it, then I do a lot of the opera things too. So it's a fun concert. It's a very demanding concert, but very, very, very good.
Marianne Cornetti visiting with us. We mentioned when Marianne came in and we were chatting for a couple of minutes before we went on the air. I don't know how I happened to mention that it was Prince Charles's birthday. I just did. He's 71 today, and my morning colleague Kate and I were joking about it. Happy birthday, Prince Charles. And Marianne said, "Oh yes," and then she got out her phone and starts flipping through some of her pictures, and handed me the phone. And there you are with Prince Charles, shaking hands with Prince Charles.
That was
you have to tell us this story, Marianne.
Oh my gosh, Dave, that was such a moment. To get to meet the royal family to an American is a really big deal.
You were singing, I guess, Great Britain somewhere.
I was singing at Covent Garden in London.
Okay,
and it was the opening night, and I was singing Aida, and the staff had asked before if it were okay if we met, the cast met Prince Charles. And when they came up to me, I said, "Are you joking? This is exciting." And they all said, "Oh, you Americans are all the same. You get so excited about the royal family." And I said, "Oh, we don't have a royal family as such." And so there we are on stage at the end. Everybody was very excited. Thank goodness I sang a very good performance. And he started clear across the stage on the left, and he came down through, the cast members and whatnot. And he got to me, and I said, "Your Royal Highness, it's such a pleasure to meet you." And he said, "Well, Marianne Cornetti, how is everything in Butler?" And my jaw fell to the floor.
That's unbelievable.
I said, "How do you know that?" And he said, oh, I know everything. And I went, oh, gosh. But the most wonderful thing is, and oh, my gosh, my mom and dad are probably listening, is we were talking, and he is not the tallest person in the world, and he hit my eyes right parallel, you know, that we were right head-to-head. Mm-hmm. And so he has the most glorious, beautiful blue eyes, Dave. And he focused in on my eyes. You know, a lot of people look around at the forehead or somebody's mouth or, you know, their nose or whatever. They don't really focus in on eye-to-eye contact. Well, believe me, it was eye-to-eye contact, and there was a magnetism that was happening. And I thought, well, if you're going to stay here, I'm going to stay here also. And so he's talking, and I start getting this ringing in my ear, like, oh, my gosh, he must be thinking that I'm just so beautiful. So I get this ringing in my ear, and then all of a sudden, I hear him start to ask a question. And it was, so doing all of these roles, how do you keep your voice so healthy? And my mother was on my left shoulder, and I'm telling you, she was saying, now, Marianne, don't say that. No, 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 don't say that. And just as that was, I was thinking that, it came out of my mouth, and I'm thinking, no, oh, no, 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 come back, come back, come back, come back. And it was too late. I said, well, Prince Charles, if you don't use it, you lose it. Oh, my gosh. And he guffawed, and I saw the staff bury their heads, and I thought, oh, geez, what did I do? But he thought it was hysterical. But then the second part of that wonderful moment was we got to go upstairs to the royal box and meet Camilla. And she, unfortunately, had fallen in a rabbit hole. She had broken her ankle.
Oh.
And she was sitting in a wheelchair, and we go into the room, and she was fascinated with my makeup because it was an incredible makeup, as you saw in the picture.
So you were still in costume.
Yes, yeah. I was still in costume, absolutely. And so it took 2.5 hours to do, and she wanted to know all about it. And so I sat to the left of her, and the others sat to the right. And she was asking a lot of questions about the makeup. And all of a sudden, she was charming, I have to say, really, really charming. And all of a sudden, Prince Charles comes to the entrance of the door, and she gives me a left elbow, boom. And she says, she turns to me and she said, oh, that's my husband. She says, darling, do come in. And she gives me this elbow and she says, oh, that's my husband. And I thought, I do know this will die. But he came over, he sat down next to me. And it was a moment that I will never, ever forget. She said to him, oh, darling, we're having the most wonderful chat with these singers. It was the soprano, the tenor, the maestro, and myself. And she said, we're having the most wonderful chat with these singers. And at that moment, I pinched my hand, and I thought, how does a kid from Denny's Mills, Pennsylvania, have a chat with the royal family? It was a moment I'll never forget. And we sat there for 15 more minutes and chatted.
What an amazing story. I don't think of Prince Charles and Camilla as being warm people. Anytime you see them, they always appear so stiff and stern, and you never see them smiling. And to hear what they're like in person, is so charming. It's amazing. And I tell you what, he walks up to you and says, hi, Marianne Carnetti. How are things in Butler, PA? I think I'd have fallen over.
I almost, my jaw really hit the floor. And then when he said, oh, I know everything, I am sure he does, because he's probably prepped, you know, to the nth degree.
Well, he has been in Pittsburgh a number of times.
Yes.
He has an avocational interest in architecture, from what I read.
Exactly.
And so I know he's been around Pittsburgh looking at some of the famous architectural landmarks and so on. And
yes.
So forth,
but I can tell you, truly, 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 they were so charming and so much fun and so inquisitive and so ingratiating. You know, I've read, I've seen, I've heard all of the things that, you know, about their stiff upper lip and, you know, not the warmest of people. I really cannot say that. They were wonderful.
Hmm. Let's take a break. We have a little bit more time to chat with Marianne Cornetti, visiting with us here in the studio today on It's Your Turn. So we'll take a break and be back in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today are good friends at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. You know, they have their thrift store in the Greater Butler Mart, and the operation of that store helps to fund their great food bank. They serve over 1,600 people a month at their food bank. They also have a client aid program, and that's especially important as we head into the cold weather season, because that can help a needy family with a doctor bill or maybe a heating bill at the end of the month, client aid. So they get the money for the client aid and for the food bank from the operation of the thrift store. Where do you come in? Well, if you're cleaning before the holidays, maybe cleaning out the spare bedroom or the attic or the hall closet, and you come up with a bunch of stuff that you don't need or you don't want, or maybe it's clothing that, you know, doesn't fit anymore, you don't want it anymore, don't just toss it into the dumpster, because it goes to the landfill. Consider donating those items to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. They take furniture, clothing, knickknacks. You'll help, and you're going to throw it away anyway, right? Society of St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store. It's in the Greater Butler Mart, just south of Butler, right on Route 8. There's tons of free parking right at the door. The drop-off bins are right inside the door. Bada-bing, bada-bing, you're in, you're out. They like to say, we stand the tallest when we stoop to help others. Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler.
In 2019, Tri-Rivers celebrates 25 years as your Butler neighbor, providing exceptional musculoskeletal care in the community.
I'm Dr. Scott Rainey, an orthopedic back and neck surgeon at Tri-Rivers. Whether I'm in the office treating patients for conditions such as cervical or lumbar stenosis, or in the operating room performing innovative procedures like disc replacements, I'm proud to care for patients in the Butler community. To learn more or to schedule an appointment, visit TriRiversMSK.com or call 1-866-874-7483.
Hi, this is Howie Pinckney with Pinckney Capital Management in Portersville. Today, many people need help managing their investments. The investment options available today can be confusing. If you would like to talk to someone for help, why not call me for an appointment? Howie Pinckney at Pinckney Capital Management, 1284 Perry Highway, Portersville, Pennsylvania. My telephone number is 724-368-4224. Securities and advisory services offered through Commonwealth Financial Network. Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening, every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
I'm having a wonderful chat today with Marianne Cornetti. Cabot native, actually Denny's Mills, but in the Cabot area, graduate of Knock High School, knew at a young age that she was going to pursue a professional career in music. She's now an internationally acclaimed opera singer, mezzo-soprano. So you graduated from Knock High School, and then you went, was it the Cincinnati Conservatory that you went to next?
First Manhattan School of Music.
Okay.
Then Cincinnati Conservatory, and then I ended up just finishing my bachelor's of music at Duquesne University. Mm-hmm. I moved around quite a bit. Some for Manhattan School of Music was just a little bit too much for me at the very beginning. Cincinnati, unfortunately, I became very ill and had to come home for a year. And then I lost my confidence a little bit. Ended up at Penn State University. Thought I was going to be a speech pathologist. And the way all of that turned out, I ended up at Duquesne and got back on track. Thank goodness for that. Mm-hmm. And then I went into the Young Artist Program with Pittsburgh Opera. And I was actually not officially in the Young Artist Program until 1990, where I was the first class of the entire year Pittsburgh Opera apprentice program. The year before, I was just an observer. My teacher knew Tito Capobianco very well, and he said, you know what, why don't you just come and observe the classes? I wasn't singing or anything like that. But as it turned out, he did ask me to get up one afternoon and sing Una Voce Poco Fa. And as that turned out, they saw that I was very serious about what I wanted to do, and they asked me to sing in the production that fall of Elektra, the first maid, the Erste Magd. And I just about fell over. I was, like, shocked, truly shocked, and it was such a big deal for me. But Tito saw something. He saw something in me, and he gave me that opportunity, and he gave me that opportunity for, well, I was in the program for 3 years, from 1990 to 93. Mm. And I'll never forget that opening night. Teo Alcantara, who was the conductor, and he had this big booming voice, but it was very low, and he said, my character comes in, the very first character to sing. And it was a very difficult entrance, and he said, Mariana, listen. And I was so impressionable at that time. He said, if you miss your entrance, the entire opera is off. And I thought, oh, no, I won't miss it. I promise you, I won't miss it. I didn't miss it.
Talk about intimidating.
Oh, huh? My gosh, he really was. Uh-huh. He really was.
Our time begins to run short here. Marianne Cornetti, you're known for doing certain roles. So you may go all over the world whenever a particular opera company is doing a particular opera, and they want you to do this role.
Yes,
right?
That's correct. It is. I am one of those really fortunate singers that became a dramatic voice, mm-hmm. and there aren't too many in the world that are true Verdianas. So I have specialized in all of the dramatic mezzo parts, especially the Verdi roles, Azucena, Amneris, Ulrica, Abigail, Lady Macbeth. I've done all of those roles, plus all of the other dramatic roles, like La Principessa di Bouillon from Adriana Lecouvreur, some Wagner, Ortrud from Lohengrin. There's so many more. But Dave, there's so many more I want to do.
Is it difficult to, obviously you've been doing this for a while, is it difficult to learn to sing in German and Italian and in French?
Well, you know what? Thank goodness I had taken those 3 years of German with Herr Lampel in Nauck High School. That gave me that first, you know, taste of a foreign language. And then, of course, the second language, which I speak fluently now, is Italian. Mm-hmm. And that's my home. That's where I'm very, very comfortable with. But I have sung, my very first recording was in Basque. If you don't think that's a difficult language, holy cow.
It's a derivative of Spanish?
It's a derivative of Spanish. It's northern Spain, Bilbao, mm-hmm. and northern Spain. But I also have sung in Czech, Russian, Hebrew. There's a lot of languages. And those languages, because I don't speak them fluently, you have to learn them phonetically, you know. And so it's been a great ride.
And on top of all that, she sat down for a chat with Prince Charles and Camilla in the box, the royal box at Covent Garden. Amazing. Listen, I could talk to you all afternoon. We'd have to send out for tea or something like that. Go over the upcoming concerts that you have here in the area.
Yes, I neglected to call the concert. I forgot to say what it's called. Then Sings My Soul.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's
My Savior God to thee.
Absolutely. November 17th, Trinity United Methodist Church, 4 p.m. All proceeds go to the Allegheny Valley Association of Churches. The following weekend, November 24th, Coriopolis United Methodist Church, 4 p.m. All proceeds go to the Coriopolis Community Food Developmental Foundation. I hope to see all of you there. I promise there will be concerts in this area also.
Well, let us know whenever those are finalized.
I definitely will.
Godspeed on your world travels, Marianne. It is always a treat to talk to you.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to see you, too.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. We're going to be chatting with Mike McCoy about, get this, asteroids. They go buzzing by the Earth all the time. I didn't know this. Kind of scary, actually. We'll talk to Mike McCoy about that in just a couple of minutes. Stick around. More of the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR after these words.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
There were lots of famous duels in history, but ours involves pianos, not pistols. Connecting to Tomorrow presents an encore performance of Piano Maniacs on Saturday, November 16th at the Lindora Legion. Tickets are $20 each, and the proceeds benefit C2T's teen mentoring programs. Doors open at 6, and the musical fun starts at 7. BYOB must be 21, and food will be available. Get tickets at the door, Butler County Radio Network, or Eventbrite Online, and join C2T for some dueling piano fun.
Coming up, listeners, this is Dave Malarkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're going to be talking about asteroids. You know what they are? Do you remember those from your high school science class or whatever? Asteroids. Our guest visits with us by telephone, and his name is Mike McCoy, and he's the author of actually a novel about asteroids. Mike McCoy, welcome. Nice to chat with you for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thank you, Dave. Happy to be here.
So, well, let's start at the very beginning, because there are probably some listeners who don't know exactly or don't remember exactly what are asteroids. Can you tell our listeners, sir?
Well, asteroids are really any kind of rocky body. It could be, you know, one big rock, or it could be a group of rocks they call a rubble pile, traveling through our inner solar system. And once an asteroid enters our atmosphere, they change its name to meteor.
Mm-hmm. Do most of them burn up?
Most of the smaller ones burn up. You'll remember, I think it was 2012 or something, in Russia, in Chelyabinsk, there was an asteroid that actually exploded in the atmosphere and broke lots of windows and injured about 1,200 people.
Yeah, that was pretty significant event. I recall that, yes. Now,
some
people might think, okay, asteroids, big deal. You know, that doesn't happen very often. You say, wow. In fact, you listed a few things in early October, four asteroids buzzing the Earth. There were two incidents in September of this year, one sneaky asteroid escaping detection. There were two incidents in August, and so we go back and back and back. Back in late July, a jumbo jet-sized asteroid just zipped safely by the Earth. So, you know, this happens a lot more than most people would realize, correct?
It does. It happens all the time. And the scary thing is that, you know, often NASA or JPL discovers that an asteroid is zipping past Earth a day or two before it actually passes us, and sometimes a day or two after it went by. So if it actually did come close enough to hit us, we wouldn't, you know, it would be a total surprise.
Hmm. Now, some may classify your novel Asteroids as science fiction. You say actually it's probably closer to science than science fiction, right?
There's a lot of science, you know, but I try to make it fun. So, you know, the reader gets educated while, you know, we're going through a fun adventure. But the scenario is, what if there was an asteroid storm coming to Earth and part of our government knew about it but kept it secret?
Hmm. So then you speculate as to what might happen from there on?
Yes, and so there's an evil colonel who's trying to create, you know, he knows that the world is going to destroy and most of us will die, and he's trying to create a utopia so that people, his select few people, can emerge after the asteroid storm to create a new humanity. And our main character doesn't quite agree with that idea. He wants to save his family and a lot of other people, too, So that's how the adventure ensues.
So in your novel, who knows about it? Portions of the government of the United States or other governments around the world?
In the book, it's really just portions of the United States government, a very small portion. And they basically, this select group has, taken a lot of people, scientists and things, kind of out of the picture so that nobody can tell or publicize. They really work hard to keep the coming asteroid storm a secret.
Well, it's very plausible that the United States or portions of the United States government would be the only ones to have knowledge of it. I mean, after all, we have the most sophisticated tracking systems and devices in the world, right, through NASA and our other agencies.
Yes, yep, mm-hmm. Yes.
So what if this actually happened? Is there anything that governments of the world could do in a scenario like this, Mike McCoy?
Presently, no. We don't have anything that would be considered planetary defense in place. There have been some concepts and discussions about how to move an asteroid, into a different orbit, but that really takes years. In the book, I created something that I call Harpoon that actually works to try to destroy an asteroid. And funny enough, after I had written the book, NASA announced a project called DART, which is a similar type of device. It doesn't explode it, but it actually is meant to move the asteroid. But that really takes a lot of planning and takes years to actually try to move an asteroid out of its current path.
Would this be a concept somewhat similar to Ronald Reagan's so-called Star Wars plan?
Well, I don't think Star Wars was looking out. I think they were probably just above our atmosphere looking down and trying to put pressure on Russia at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to eliminate incoming weaponry from Russia.
Missiles and things, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So under your scenario, this the so-called Harpoon, it would not necessarily be to blow up the asteroid in outer space, but simply to shift its path. Is that what you're saying?
Well, in my story, it actually does try to blow up the asteroid. And I got that idea from reading a research paper by a NASA scientist. And he actually helped me edit it and make sure I did it correctly. So there are concepts of nuclear-tipped, hypervelocity, impact vehicles that would actually blow up an asteroid, and so that's what we do in the book, or at least we try.
If you're joining us a little bit late, we're talking with Mike McCoy. He's the author of a novel. The title, in fact, is Asteroids, and that's what it's about. Do you set this at any specific time in the future, Mike?
It's in the near future, probably 20 years out, but I don't really give a specific date. There are clues to the date in the book, but I don't really give a specific date. And so a lot of the technology and things in the book are some things that maybe people have heard of before, have seen demos or examples of future products, but in the book, future technology is really something people are using every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have autonomous cars these days, driverless vehicles.
They're coming, yes. Nobody's really using one yet, but in the book they do, and they use products like very heavily in the book is something called a view lens, which are glasses that become your interface. So imagine wearing your iPhone and using your hand to change from screen to screen and search and things like that. There are concepts out there from Microsoft and a few other companies. Apple's rumored to maybe have a device. There's an article on my website, mikemccoy.org, that talks about some of these developments. But there's nothing that's really replaced your iPhone today. Mm-hmm. So maybe in 10 or 15 years, everybody will be wearing computer glasses.
You talk about hypersonic scramjets in your novel. We've seen stories over the past several years about hypersonic trains. In fact, just within this past few months, there have been additional stories about, the possibility of a hypersonic train connecting Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Chicago. So that seems to be coming at some point in the maybe not too distant future, huh?
Yes, and that's why I kind of, instead of really calling this science fiction so much, I call it science faction, because the technologies in the book are in development. They're not something that we have today necessarily. And the idea was that younger readers would be interested in Google those technologies and learn more. And maybe the young people of today will be the ones that bring those products to reality.
Do we have any idea as to the size of that asteroid that blew up just before hitting in the Soviet Union a few years back? Have scientists been able to estimate how big that was?
They did. They have. I think it was, they said, 50, 60 meters, I'm guessing by memory. It wasn't that big enough to get through the atmosphere, but, not big enough to actually impact Earth. It blew up in the atmosphere.
We hear every so often about meteor showers, one's called the Perseoid, I think, or something like that, every so often. These are, in fact, asteroids, right?
Well, generally, those types of meteor showers are from the tail of a comet that passes by, and it's usually just the dust and the debris from the comet that is coming into the atmosphere, not quite like an asteroid storm or something. And I had a challenge to come up with a concept that was plausible. How could an asteroid storm actually come to Earth? And I had written out something that I thought was, had some scientific basis, but I was really guessing. And I saw an article by Dr. Joe Nuth of NASA and about asteroids impacting Earth, and I contacted him. And I told him my idea, and he said, no, that's impossible. But here's how it would work. And so he gave me the plausible concept of how an asteroid storm could come to Earth.
Hmm. You had to do quite a bit of research, I'm guessing, as you were preparing to write this novel?
Yeah, many, many hours of research and with the help of a couple of NASA scientists. And luckily I'm a bit of a nerd, so I had fun searching and researching all types of things.
Have you been interested in this particular topic all your life, or is this something that developed relatively recently, Mike McCoy?
I think I've always been interested in science and things. Not so much space that much, so it was new, and it was a lot of fun to learn.
Hmm. You raise some philosophical questions in your novel, Asteroids, for example. If governments, or at least a portion of a government, knew that this was inevitable, that asteroid storm was heading toward Earth, how do you decide which people to save? Who makes that decision?
Yeah, well, that's a hard one, right? So, in the book, the evil Colonel Crookshank decides on his own that he will save his few and fortunate, his select few. And our main character decides that they should try to save more. So in the book, they had implemented something called the Bliss Protocol, which basically meant they're not telling anybody anything because ignorance is bliss, and just let people fend for themselves when the storm actually hits Earth. But then there's also a smaller group of survivors who have to make the same decision, but the same decision about who to save and who not to, who to let into their hiding place, impacts them, because if you add too many people to a closed place, you maybe bring in extra people, but you all die because there aren't enough resources to support you all.
This is the group that you referred to earlier in our conversation who would like to try to create a utopian society after the asteroids hit?
Yes, yeah, the evil Colonel Crookshank, he wants to create this he wants to save his select few so that after the storm they can emerge and have a better, more humane society. And he's very determined to have utopia no matter what it takes. So he's a bit extreme in his idea of creating his utopia.
Utopia is a society, a great society for all. The opposite is dystopia. And that has become very, very popular, has it not, in novels and in cinema in recent years? Stories about dystopia, Mike.
It has.
I wonder why the fascination?
You know, I think that, you know, people like to daydream. They like to fantasize. Sometimes we're struggling with, you know, with life as it is, and we think, well, geez, if I could just wipe out everything and start over, maybe I could make life better. And they like to imagine how they would make it better, but also inevitably there's also something that's going to end up being worse. So I think it's just a fascination people have about, you know, grass is greener on the other side, fantasizing how life could be different.
I've mentioned these numerous headlines over the past several months, the past 5-6 months, about close calls from asteroids. Has the U.S. government ever actually issued any stories about this or warnings about this or anything from NASA or anybody else?
Well, they do release news releases about asteroid flybys and things like that. But there's just no way to know. They just don't know everything that's out there. You know, there's a project that NASA is supposed to be cataloging all the near-Earth asteroids of a certain size that could be a threat. And they just haven't had the resources to or the missions to be able to complete that. So there's still a lot of asteroids out there that we don't know about. You know, NASA always is looking very far back into, you know, 50 light years away, 100 light years away, trying to find the beginning of the Big Bang. But in the meantime, we're not looking at our own solar system. You know, just last month, we discovered 12 more moons in orbit around Jupiter. You would have thought we would know what's in our own solar system by now.
One would think, with astronomers and astrophysicists looking all the time through these high-powered telescopes and instruments, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I was really shocked.
Well, it's an interesting concept for a novel. Methinks, Mike McCoy, that if the late Rod Serling were still alive, he would be after you for the film rights to your novel.
I would be happy to to help him with that.
And we will explain that to some of our younger listeners. Rod Serling was the creator of The Twilight Zone, which was a very popular TV series for the time that it ran. But that was a long, long time ago, was it not?
That was right. It's before they discovered color TV.
That's right. It was black and white. It's true. I've seen some of the old videotapes.
We age ourselves.
Mike McCoy is the author of a new novel. The title is Asteroids. And you gave a website earlier, Mike, as we wrap up here. Can you repeat that for listeners who might want to get more information about you or your book?
Sure. It's MikeMcCoy.org, MikeMcCoy.org. MCCOY, like the real McCoy, and you can find the book anywhere ebooks are sold, and it's, you know, it's not an expensive book, so it's also a fun, fast, easy read for, you know, middle schoolers and older.
Nice to talk to you, Mike. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today.
Great, thank you very much, Dave.
Sure. So long now.
All right, thank you.
Shopping for a mortgage? Don't just compare the mortgage rates. At Armco Credit Union, they'll not only offer a competitive rate, but they may be able to save you money with lower fees and closing costs. Whether you're looking for a VA, FHA, or conventional loan, they're here to help guide you through the mortgage process so you can make the best decision for your situation. Call today, 724-284-2020. Don't have time to call or visit? Apply for a mortgage online at armcocu.com. Like them on Facebook and be the first to learn about their promotions or events. Armco Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity and is federally insured by NCUA.
At Osterling's Lawn and Garden, they can't control the weather, but they can prepare you for it. With plenty of winter supplies, you will be set for the entire cold season. They have snow shovels, winter gloves, rock salt, calcium chloride flakes and pellets, and even paw-thaw snow melt that is safe for your pets. Don't forget their annual Black Friday sale this year with 50% off select items like muck boots, Rada cutlery, bird feeders, and a whole lot more. Visit Osterling's Lawn and Garden to get prepared for the cold winter weather.
Tobacco for Less is perfect if you like to think big. Tobacco for Less is Western Pennsylvania's largest glass emporium, which has hundreds of glass pipes,
a custom walk-in humidor stocked with a huge selection of cigars, and a 19-foot vape juice bar. They're always stocked with standard tobacco products, and their health and wellness department maintains a wide selection of CBD products. Tobacco for Less is always expanding and adding to their product lines. Be sure to check out their Sharon location that has just added a large health and wellness department. Stop by one of their locations in Butler, Sharon, or Aliquippa for all your smoking and vaping needs.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.